Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Well, we almost had a finals. It was real close. We got a few games. I'm not sure if you guys saw the same series I did, but man, that was rough. We really didn't get the competition we were hoping for. I know Golden State didn't get the competition they were hoping for, or at least thinking they might have out there. It was one of three really bad playoff series we saw this year. We'll get into more of that later, but basically, I guess we're caught in that purgatory now where we don't have the finals. It's not quite draft time. It's not quite NFL preseason. No one's really super interested in what Johnny Manziel's up to in Canada. So here we are. If you're not a diehard baseball fan or a soccer fan, you may not have much going for you right now. But still plenty of sports to keep track of, and we try to do that for you guys. So thanks for checking us out. I want to bring in my co-host, collaborator, you know, partner in crime, whatever you want to call him. Bryant Knox, at Bryant Knox on Twitter. The guy's all over the place. He's blowing up. The world just can't get enough of him, and neither can this show. So, Bryant, how the heck are you? And, you know, it's a recurring theme, but where are you broadcasting from? It's never the same place, I don't think.
Well, I wouldn't say it's never the same place. I would say that it's always unique because actually the last three times we've done this, it has been the exact same place. But the fun part about it is that it's today we are once again on my Northeast Portland rooftop looking at Mount St. Helens on my left, Mount Hood on my right, downtown Portland kind of behind me. It's a beautiful place to be, I must say.
So I'm not much of a view. I mean, nothing to look at.
Yeah, no kidding. But the only reason I'm willing to kind of brag about it here is because I am this will be my last time up here as I'm moving back out to the burbs next weekend. So I'm taking full advantage of it while I can.
You have to. You know, you called the show from such glamorous places like Pit Stop and Fireside, and we still need to do a Fireside episode at Fireside. That'll have to happen the move once you're closer to where the show broadcasts from, which is still from undisclosed location, so.
And hey, if Pizza Schmitza wants to throw me some spicy barbecue slices, I would be happy to go back to their venue as well.
Can we bring spicy barbecue Pizza Schmitza to Fireside? Is that against the rules? How does that work?
We may have to, you know, negotiate that into the contract. But hey, if we're there and we happen to order some gorgonzola cheese dip to go with those slices, man. I think it can work out.
That could really work. And, you know, worst case scenario is they incorporate the spicy barbecue pizza into their offering. So could kill two birds with one stone right here. Sorry to you environmentalists or animal protectors out there. We're not actually killing birds. The show works very much to make sure they don't harm any animals. So if you're looking to do something about that, look elsewhere, because we don't do anything about that here. So, well, Bryant, the NBA Finals are over. Feels like they never really got going, man. I don't know what to say. This seems like a really letdown of a series. What's your knee-jerk reaction to it being Tuesday, the second week of June, and the playoffs are over?
I was hoping for a better series. I'm sure I'm not the first person to say that. That's not a novel concept. I will say that I'm not totally shocked because I was more than willing to give Cleveland one game in this series. I even went on a ledge and said that Cleveland would get one of the first two games of the series, if you remember from a couple of our episodes ago. And I thought that we would get a 4-1 five-game series. So to call it a shock that we've had a sweep is certainly not in the cards. That said, we really only ended up with two competitive games out of the whole series, and that's really just unfortunate for basketball fans everywhere.
So you have, if correct me if I'm wrong, but by my count, you've got three sweeps in all of the playoffs. One by the Pelicans against the Blazers, one by the Cavaliers against the Raptors, and then one by the Warriors against the Cavs in the NBA Finals. Now, this is the first sweep in the finals since the last time LeBron was swept. That's a really ugly trend that he's on, you know, every 15 years or whatever it's been. I think it's 11 years. But is that something that was a little unprecedented to have that few uncompetitive series and then the rest were pretty stretched out? Or is this kind of how you saw it breaking down over the course of the playoffs?
I don't know if it's exactly how I thought it was going to go down. There were a whole bunch of curveballs in this postseason. I thought that Portland would put up a much better fight against New Orleans. That right. clearly didn't happen. There was no way I was going to pick Indiana to beat Cleveland in round one. But when we were looking at a game seven, a game six, I started to honestly think that Cleveland could genuinely fall in round one. And, you know, that didn't happen. But the fact that it was that close was certainly interesting. I thought that the Cleveland-Boston series was fantastic. I really did. I know that not all the games were competitive, and that's unfortunate. But the fact that we had just a young, deep roster in Boston going up against LeBron at the just most elite level, I thought was pretty fascinating. So, I mean, as far as the playoffs as a whole, I guess you could, when it's all said and done, say that it played out the way I sort of expected. I just wish that it had been a little more competitive toward the end and wish that maybe along the way, you know, clearly I wish Portland had done better. I'm a Portland homer. You know that. I wish that Toronto had put up a better fight, mostly just because I thought they would. And I looked like an idiot when it was all said and done because of them. So I don't know. I guess I'm just rambling at this point. I think it all in the very, very end played out how it was supposed to.
Do you think Golden State tries to lure J.R. Smith to the Bay this summer?
No, because I think that they
go MVP. One. Why wouldn't they?
I think that he actually is a very interesting piece that they could add, but they actually have their eyes set on a particular player who gave them a couple of minor headaches in the previous round, Trevor Ariza. And, you know, anybody who says LeBron James is going to Golden State just doesn't quite understand how this works out. I get that that's a fun story to talk about, but it's just not going to happen. So
he's not Karl Malone. Come on. He wouldn't do that.
No, definitely not. You skip the top tier guys. You skip the second tier guys. You even skip the third tier guys. And then you end up with the guys who are still competitive but are also in ring chase mode, and I guess you could actually say that fits LeBron's MO right now, but we're gonna disregard that and we're gonna look at someone like a Trevor Ariza who could come in, be the perfect 3-and-D guy for them, not even gonna play every single game, but at the end of his career he doesn't need to. So no, I think, you know, J.R. Smith clearly the MVP of this series, let's be honest, but as far as this offseason goes, I think they're gonna look at someone more like a Trevor Ariza.
I mean, you can't really point to any other player and say they shifted the way the series went more than he did. So I don't know how you don't give him most valuable player.
Yeah, he was huge for Golden State.
Huge. They chanted MVP at him in game two. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, the guy saved your season, really.
Golden State fans are savage now that they're winners.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's only been about 16 months, but it's fine. Totally fine. And, you know, they'll have their day, and then they'll go back to eating crow for the rest of their lives. And that's just the way – that's the life cycle of an NBA champion. You're on cloud nine. You don't know how long. You got to ride that out as long as you can. Personally, I don't believe in making the other 29 teams feel like absolute garbage the whole time that you're a champion. But that's just me. You know, I can't make the rules for the rest of them and how they behave. But just seems like, you know – any team that wins in the West Coast, like, they just want to make life just absolute hell for anybody else that calls themselves a fan of another franchise.
Yeah, and
East Coast teams, they do it whether they win or lose, but at least the West Coast waits till they're winners to start calling people losers.
Kind of. Kevin Durant had a couple quotes ahead of the parade. I know Nick Young was running around with his shirt off ahead of the parade. At least Jordan Bell, right? Oregon Duck, big-time draft prospect who had a bigger role in Golden State's roster than anybody could have anticipated. He at least waited till the parade to jump off the parade and grab a bottle of Hennessy from a fan in the crowd. So he, you know, credit to him, man. He waited to hijack the Hennessy until the parade. I'm not sure we can say that about Nick Young this year. Maybe not even J.R. Smith 2 years ago. Props to Jordan Bell, man.
So I'm going to do something that's very mean, and I apologize in advance for how much this is going to sting. So I'm going to name three players, and you tell me which one's not an NBA champion. So number one, Nick Young. Number two, J.R. Smith.
All right.
Number three, Clyde Drexler.
So I'm going to say Clyde Drexler is a champion in my heart.
He is.
I think he's also a champion with the Houston Rockets. Is he not?
He is.
Okay.
I just wanted to see if I could trick question you there, because a lot of people I've been asking, like, man, it really sucks that Nick Young's a champ before Clyde ever was. Like, yeah, man, that really stinks. Like, No, it doesn't, because they're all three champions. Like, well, Clyde never won with the Blazers. Like, well, it turns out he didn't just play for the Blazers, but that's okay. You need to do more research. That's all right.
Yeah, the whole Clyde situation is an interesting one, and we could probably devote an entire podcast to this, but I know that he truly identifies with the Houston Rockets, despite the fact that he played the vast majority of his NBA career with the Blazers. Now, I know that he has collegiate roots and whatnot, to Houston, and much more than that. He's a broadcaster for...
Well, he's from there.
So I can't blame the guy for that, but I know that it's sort of a harsh reality for Blazers fans to realize that no matter how many years he played with Portland, he was never truly going to be a Rip citizen. He was always going to be from Clutch City, not Rip City.
Well, and I guess the one thing to take away is that if somehow that ended up upending the Pistons or the Bulls, or maybe just drew a different opponent entirely, I mean, it kind of stinks that he got stuck with two of the best dynasties of all time roadblocking him from a championship, and then he goes to Houston and they get the Knicks and Magic, who, while they were amazing teams, they're not going to be remembered as one of the best dynasties of all time. I know a lot of people like to think of the 90s Knicks as one of the best teams ever, but A, they won zero titles, and B, they won zero titles, which kind of removes you from the dynasty conversation, folks. Listen, these are not my rules. You have to win titles to be in that conversation.
Hey, you definitely have to win titles. You can be a great regular season team, as 2 years ago Warriors showed us, and that doesn't mean jack squat, because they set the record for the most regular season wins of all time. Then they went on to lose to LeBron and blow a 3-1 lead in the finals, right? I'm not taking anything away from that team as a whole, but you can't claim to be one of the greatest of all time if you didn't win a championship. That's what it really comes down to.
Is it weird that the Warriors took a star player that lost the 3-1 series and teamed them up with another player that lost the 3-1 series and made an unbeatable team?
It's unprecedented. I don't know if I'd call it weird, just because here's my thing on this. And again, this could be a podcast in and of itself, but I have no problem with a team finding a loophole and a player choosing where he wants to go. That's what free agency was created for. It's so these players aren't locked into lifetime contracts. And I completely respect that. I think there's a ton of good that comes from that. Unfortunately, it's made it really difficult for everybody else, but I have no problem with the way it all worked out, to be honest.
Oh, I think it's a perfect way to execute the way the system works, and if you can do that, all the more power to you. I completely agree. That's what they were able to do, and that's what they should have done, and hats off to them for pulling it off. You know, 29 other teams had a shot at it and just didn't pull it off. It's not shame on the Warriors. It's shame on you for not making the deal.
Exactly.
If LeBron had gone to Durant, I'm not sure that Durant would have said no to LeBron, because I think if you had Durant to Cleveland, you probably got a title in Cleveland last year, maybe even this year, whereas we have what we have, and that's the way it is. But Speaking of that, that's actually a really good segue into one of our next topics. Is there a team in the league other than Golden State or Houston that's a Durant or a LeBron away from being as high up as Golden State is?
Man, that's such a question because it really depends on which conference you're in, right? Like you can talk about LeBron to Boston, which as we did last week, and you can talk about that, and that's kind of a fun scenario to think about. But here's the actual truth and the actual reality. Kevin Durant was almost a Boston Celtic, right? A couple almost. Summers ago, Kevin Durant met in the Hamptons with Brad Stevens and Tom Brady, of all people, and he legitimately thought about signing with the Boston Celtics. And obviously, he ended up going on and making his choice to play for the Warriors, and that was a brilliant decision on his part. But, like this isn't even that much of a hypothetical. This was a almost reality situation where he played for the Celtics. And, yeah, if Kevin Durant were on the Celtics right now, are you kidding me? They would just be the cream of the absolute NBA crop. Now, if you're talking about LeBron, you can talk about a whole bunch of teams. Philly probably qualifies. Houston qualifies. Boston definitely qualifies. Of course, Golden State qualifies. But beyond that, there is just such a difference between the top-tier teams and the second-tier teams and the third-tier teams. And I'm not sure one of those guys gets them there. But like I said, this was almost not a hypothetical situation. This was almost reality with Durant going to Boston a couple years ago.
But if you rule out Golden State as a landing spot and both Durant and LeBron opt out of their deals, which they could do this year, what two teams would you want to see them go to ensure they're facing each other in at least the conference finals, if not the NBA finals?
You know, Kevin Durant has already said that he's going to sign with Golden State, and Joe Lacob, one of the majority owners of Golden State, has said that Kevin Durant basically has a blank check. So I'm going to proceed with this conversation assuming Kevin Durant is in Golden State. But as far as LeBron goes, if he goes to Houston, easy matchup. Pick the two of them just to make the Western Conference Finals. There's no debate there. If LeBron goes to Boston, easy choice. LeBron in Boston ends up in the finals against KD and the Warriors. Now, I think where it becomes super interesting is if LeBron goes to a Philly team. You know, it was either our first episode last week or our second episode last week where I was talking about kind of the benefits and the risks of LeBron going to Philly. I think that that's actually one of the more interesting cases to see a LeBron Philly squad match up against a Boston squad as is and kind of see who ends up in the finals there. It's easily one of them, but to see which one goes is the most interesting case. And I think that beyond that, you're just looking at not enough parity and competitiveness between that top tier and second or third tier squad.
What if somehow the deal with Warriors fell through or Durant felt like he was not going to last there much longer, given some of these whispers we've heard about locker room problems? What if he went to Houston or if he went to Philadelphia and LeBron goes to Houston? Could you see that being two overnight Cinderella stories and they're both better than Golden State without Durant, or is that something where you'd still have to go through the Bay to get to the finals?
That is such a good question. I'd honestly never even thought of that. I want to jump into some sort of NBA simulator right now and figure out what happens in that situation, because here's the deal. Golden State is probably still the favorite just on reputation alone and the fact that Stephen Curry is Stephen Curry and the fact that Draymond Green has not yet hit a massive decline. I think he took a step backward this year, and that's unfortunate for him, but I don't think it was enough to say he is on the downfall. Now the only reason I bring that up is because I am of the unpopular opinion that he is going to have in the next few years a Gerald Wallace type fall off.
Right.
I know that's not a popular take, but that's my honest opinion. Is I think he's going to lose his athleticism. That's going to take his defense out of it. And then at that point, he's going to be relegated to a passer out of the elbow, and you could find that on a much cheaper contract. So let me let me backtrack just a little bit because I'm going off on a tangent here. Okay. I think that if you throw Kevin Durant on the Sixers, oh, that is the team to beat. And if you throw LeBron James on the Rockets, they are a true contender up against a Golden State sans KD. So, yeah, in that particular situation, I think you have a great finals between KD's Philly and LeBron's Houston.
So what would you rather see, KD in Philly or KD in Golden State and LeBron go to Houston? What's your ideal landing spot for these two superstars if you can just pick a spot on the map? You don't have to worry about whether they're under contract or not.
No, exactly what you just said. KD in Philly and LeBron in Houston. I think that LeBron in Houston is complicated because you don't exactly know what role he's going to play, but you also don't have too much concern having just watched an entire year of two ball dominant guards in James Harden and Chris Paul. I think that LeBron can let them dominate the ball. Sure, LeBron will definitely bring the ball up the court every now and again, but for the most part, he's going to play out of the elbow and out of the block and in backdoor cuts, and he's going to be just fine with that because he has two all-world point guards getting him the ball in the right situation. And as far as KD goes, man, if you can let KD bring the ball up the court every now and again, but not have to worry about stunting the development of Ben Simmons, which you might actually have with LeBron on the roster, that's just the perfect situation. You let KD play on the perimeter, let Ben Simmons play the floor general, a 6'10 floor general, by the way, which is right. Also unfair in and of its own right. But that roster right there with then Joel Embiid, Robert Covington, who is maybe slightly overpaid, but is going to get the job done for sure. If J.J. Redick happens to take a major pay cut and rejoin that team as well, and then you still don't even know what you have in Markelle Fultz, which I know is a negative for them this year, but is a huge positive going forward because at this point his ceiling can only go up based on what we saw this year. Man, if you throw him on that team, I don't know why people aren't actually talking about that right now. The more that we discuss this, I'm all on board with KD on Philly.
Well, to me, this is like the late 80s Celtics Lakers all over again. I mean, you'd basically be giving both teams the superstar you need to make both teams the super teams. And there's enough injury threat to both teams that you can't guarantee either one makes it to the finals or even the conference finals. So there is some doubt on who will make it and how. And you've got the same problem now with Golden State where Klay Thompson's been banged up, Draymond Green's been banged up, Steph Curry is perpetually banged up. You don't really know who's going to be on the court at any given time. You know you like Jordan Bell, but you don't know if he's like a guy that could step in if Draymond Green goes down for extended time or if he loses his mind and changes teams. I think that just that gives you a lot more competition in the NBA, but also makes it so much more fun to watch because you now would have a couple teams that are just as good as each other where if they make it to the finals, you know, open up your schedule for that week or week and a half because you're going to want to see every one of those games.
It'd be an incredible series. There's no denying that.
So we'll have to hope that that happens. I don't think there's any chance we get that. At this point, we can only hope that one of them ends up in Houston or Philadelphia because I think we're kind of done with the Golden State-Cleveland series as it stands. So at this point, you're adding KD back to the Warriors, and you're now just loaded with talent again. You don't really know if you'll have a challenger in the West, let alone the league next year, but you might because some of these other super teams that formed last year have now got a year under their belt, and they might be a little bit better. But if you were going to jump back in time and throw the Warriors against another dynasty from the past, is there a past dynasty you think would lock horns with them really well, or are they just a little too good and you're not really sure who you could pin up against them that would do the job?
Yeah, I think that the popular take on this is going to be either the Boston team that ran the league for a decade, or maybe the Showtime Lakers because they got up and down the court. Maybe the popular pick is Michael Jordan and the two separate three-peats. Maybe one of those rosters could go at this team. But the team that I actually really would like to see play against this current iteration of Warriors is the God, like the late 90s, early 2000s Spurs. Yeah. I would love to see a team that was, you know, inside out in its X's and O's approach, which is very counter to Golden State. I would love to see that team go up against them. But a lot of these teams I just described are going to be inside out. So what it really comes down to is really the greatest power forward of all time in Tim Duncan up against them, as well as a young Manu Ginobili, who's going to be a threat on the perimeter and in the backcourt. In the backdoor cuts,
right.
You're going to have a Tony Parker who can get to the rim. And, you know, Tony was never a great defensive player, mostly just because of his size and stature. But he was a decent defender who I think could actually step up on Stephen Curry very well during his prime.
Sure.
You have someone in Bruce Bowen who is going to make life hell on whoever is trying to go off on Golden State, whether it be Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry. You know, Bruce Bowen never had the size to compete with Kevin Durant, but he had the physicality. He could get under his skin for sure. I think the same way that we saw like a Joe Ingles this year get under the skin of a Paul George and a Carmelo Anthony in the playoffs. That's right. Exactly what Bruce Bowen's going to do. And, man, that team right there in its prime against this particular Warriors team in its prime, like I said, those Spurs are not the Bulls of the mid-90s. They are not the Celtics that ran the league for 10-plus years. But that's what I would like to see is that team versus this current dynasty.
Well, if you, and I know you said late 90s to early 2000s, but if you go with the 07 incarnation of the Spurs, you've basically got the team that swept the Cavs versus the team that swept the Cavs. So not bad there.
Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't even think of it to that extent, but you're exactly right.
What about, like, if you took, like, an all-defensive team, like the 04 Pistons, do you think they'd give this Golden State team a run for their money? Or are they kind of lucky to get a Shaq-Kobe team that was not playing up to their level and kind of hung one out to dry in the finals? I know we talk about how good that team was, and I'd love to see Ben Wallace versus Draymond Green under the hoop, but is that a team that could maybe give this team some challenges, or is that one that you'd probably look at and go, I don't think they could maybe hold off Kevin Durant for much longer than Cleveland did?
No, Ben Wallace versus Draymond Green would be the only really truly appealing part of that series. I think Rasheed Wallace would be fantastic as far as spreading the court goes. I think Tayshaun Prince playing defense on maybe Kevin Durant, maybe Klay Thompson. But as good a defensive team as that was, and as well as that team played together for 3 years, I don't think that was a team that would really hold its ground against this current Warriors squad.
Yeah, I think you'd have to
as good as some of those individual players were.
Yeah. Well, they're one of the best, you know, one-off teams that we've ever seen, but they're not a dynasty. They got beat the next year by the Spurs, and you know, I think that just speaks to how great those mid-2000 Spurs teams really were. Once Ginobili and Parker got going, they had Michael Finley, they had Bruce Bowen, they had all these guys that just did amazing, and that was after they lost the Admiral. So it just gets, like, crazy how good they were. They had Robert Horry, who was just undefendable late in the game. It was scary how many shots he made. I think that would be a really fun matchup to watch, because with how much depth these Golden State Warriors have, they're basically built in the image of Popovich's Spurs from the mid-2000s, which Steve Kerr was a member of. So I think there's definitely something there with how he's building his franchise.
Yeah, and just to, like, really double down on the Spurs idea, like, we're not even mentioning some of probably the greatest role players of all time. They had Steve Kerr in the late 90s. They had Avery Johnson as their point guard in the late 90s. Sean Elliott has one of the most devastating shots in Trailblazers history on his resume.
Right.
The shot where he was tippy-toeing the line and just happened to not cross over. You also have guys like Antonio Daniels, Mario Elie, Malik Rose. Like, these are Jerome Kersey. Jerome Kersey played for the Spurs.
Right.
That just popped into my head. Like, these guys had an incredible roster of guys who not only could lead the way, but could also follow. And that's what I would like to see against this current iteration that is today's Warriors.
So we're getting short on time, so we got to move on to our final segment, which is kind of the opposite of the question we just asked, which was kind of a dream matchup. Instead, we want to list off our least memorable finals that we've ever seen, because this year definitely ranks among them. It just didn't have a whole lot of draw. I mean, the matchups on paper looked like they were going to be really interesting, and then once they all got on the court, game one fizzled once they got to overtime, game two fizzled once you got to the fourth quarter, and then there were games three and four that really aren't worth mentioning much. So what top five would you have, Bryant, if you had to list your least favorite finals that you've watched in your lifetime?
So I don't know if this is in any particular order. In fact, I can just guarantee you it's not in any particular order.
It doesn't need to be in one. We don't want to rank bad they really are.
No. We'll give them a little bit of, we'll spare them that. But I definitely have to include this year's finals in that. I think that there was serious potential for it to be very, very good up until the closing moments of the fourth quarter in game one. And then as soon as that happened with J.R. Smith and whatnot, there was just there's no desire to win the series as far as LeBron and his squad went. So that this year's finals definitely ranks among the bottom five that I've personally witnessed. But then after that, and I'll go in, I think, chronological order here, as long as I can remember the dates correctly. The 99 finals with the Spurs and the Knicks, that one ranks among the least memorable, mostly just because it was on the it was in the aftermath of Michael Jordan's last finals with the Bulls and his shot against Byron Russell, and whether he pushed off or not, we can debate that later. But there was the 99 finals, which I just thought was such a letdown in the post-Jordan era, the immediate post-Jordan era. The 2003 Spurs and Nets.
It's on my
list. The most exciting part. Yeah, and I actually, it's honestly a shame because I really like the team of Richard Jefferson and Kenyon Martin, right. Jason Kidd, Vince Carter, right? Those are actually really exciting teams.
They were all really good.
Kerry Kittles, I think Sam Cassell might have been on that team. But there was not competitiveness in that series. And what that series really came down to was whether or not Tim Duncan recorded a quadruple-double. I know there's still to this day some controversy over that because the replay shows that there were two particular blocks. He finished the game with eight blocks, by the way, and which is just a ridiculous thing that we're even saying out loud. But in a finals game, he recorded eight blocks, and the replays have since shown that he may have touched the ball first on two different blocks where David Robinson was credited with it. So he may or may not have scored a triple-double or a quadruple-double. And the fact that we're talking about that and not the series itself, I think, says why it's on our list.
Right.
After that, I have the 2005 Spurs and Pistons. And I really, really don't mean to just, like, crap on the Spurs here because they were a great team. They were entertaining as far as, you know, basketball fundamentals went. But the honest truth is that in 2004 – we watched the Pistons as a starless team, right? A team that doesn't have a star, as long as you don't consider Chauncey Billups, Ben Wallace, Rip Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, or Rasheed Wallace a star.
I don't.
The team went on to beat Shaq and Kobe Bryant, Lakers. And that was such an incredible year in 2004. That when they made it again in 2005 and they played the regular, boring, fundamental Spurs, there was just honestly nothing that entertaining about it. The next one on my list, and I think this is five, so this will wrap it up for me, is the 2009 finals between the Lakers and the Magic. And the reason it's so disappointing for me honestly has way less to do with how the series actually played out. And it has more to do with the fact that LeBron hit his true signature shot against Orlando.
Right.
that series was looking like we were finally going to get Kobe versus LeBron in the NBA championship. And then LeBron and his Cavs, and we ended up with a Lakers Magic finals. That was just such a dull of a 4-1 Lakers series win that it was such a disappointment based on what we thought we were going to get. So that's my five in no particular order except chronological, kind of. So,
yeah, I've got a few of those on mine as well. Mine starts off with 95 Rockets Magic. I mean, we had 94 where you had a really nice 7-game series between the Rockets and Knicks the year after Jordan retired initially. And then you had this puke fest the following year where, you know, Shaq couldn't keep up with Hakeem, which nobody could at that point in his career. But it was just kind of sad to see Shaq as an up-and-coming center for the Magic just get blown away in the finals. They lost 4-0. And, you know, luckily we got Jordan back the next year. But it was really even more sad that the Magic beat the Bulls in the playoffs that year when Jordan came back midway through the season and just wasn't in quite good enough shape, got stolen away from by Nick Anderson. I mean, it was a bad series for them, and they could have won. It would have been fun to see Jordan against Clyde in the finals and for a rematch and see Hakeem versus Bill Cartwright or Will Perdue, whoever the Bulls had at the time. We didn't get that. We got the Magic, and there was no Magic involved. It was a really boring series. Then in 2002, you had the Lakers and the Nets, and, you know, if you thought the Spurs and the Nets were boring, you probably didn't like the Lakers-Nets much better. And then the following year, yeah, you got Spurs and Nets, and unfortunately, the Nets are like the Bills. You know, they get there, and then they just give you nothing once they get there. You got nothing to watch. And then 2007 Spurs-Cavs, I mean, who wants to watch a sweep in the finals? That's why there's two of them on my list. And then, oh wait, there's another one because there's 2018 Warriors-Cavs. I just really don't like seeing lopsided series. When we wait all season for two teams to show down in the finals and we get one team doesn't even show up at all or isn't capable of showing up, it just makes me sick because, you know, I'm a fan. I watch the series. I want to watch every second of it, but if they're going to not entertain me, I don't even want to watch at all. And it makes me sad to say that about the NBA Finals. That used to be something that you waited for all year. Now, the last couple haven't been very good. The previous two before that were really good. And we had a string before that that were really good. And then now we seem like we're in a rut. And I hope that next year somehow that Philadelphia-Houston series pans out and we get the showdown for the ages we've been waiting for.
It's, for me, it's one of those situations where I have really advocated for Warriors-Cavs for the last few years. Truly believed that it's the best two teams, and that's what we in sports and in basketball want to see. But you're exactly right, that we spend the entire year waiting for this moment, and then it's a beatdown. So at this point, I wouldn't hate some serious change and watching a series play out that, hey, you know, 7-game series out of it, and you'd hear no complaints from me.
Yeah, I know. Listen to us, the spoiled brats, who got 7-game series in both conference finals, both series go down to the wire, and then we're just complaining that the finals weren't good enough. But first world problems, bro. First world problems. So anyway, that's going to have to be a wrap for this week. We're almost to 40 minutes. We told you guys we'd get you out in 30 minutes, so we'll check you out next week. We definitely want to cover some NBA draft stuff because that's the next week. That's the NBA draft. So if you haven't marked it on your calendar, make sure you do. It's Thursday, June 21st, also the first day of summer. Make sure you mark that down. Thank you for checking us out. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm Casey Mabbitt, at Oregon Sports Guy on Twitter. He's Bryant Knox, at Bryant Knox on Twitter. Make sure you check him out. He's all over the place. All of the stuff he writes is gold. Make sure you check it out. Check him out on Twitter. He always shares the funniest stuff. I get a kick out of every time. Make sure you do the same. Thanks, Bryant. Want to thank you for you and your rooftop. I know that's really neat, so we appreciate you being up there and sharing the views with us, even though we can't see them, but you paint a very pretty picture over the air, so we appreciate the story time. So thanks again, and we'll see you next week.